Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, starting the show today to talk about the Women's Soccer World Cup with our guest, Jeff Reuter. Jeff's a staff writer covering soccer at The Athletic. And it's a great service The Athletic performs, by the way. I read it every day. We'll learn later on in the show about a Madison area youth soccer coach, and she's going to talk about what the future holds for girls in soccer. But first, the World Cup and the U.S. Tell us why you're watching the World Cup. Were you up this morning to watch the game the U.S. had? Oh, man, it was would have been a late night. And I imagine Jeff's probably drinking some coffee right about now. But as we talk with him, I do hope you'll join in. How have you seen youth soccer change over the years, maybe? What do you think about the U.S. Chances in the World Cup? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jeff Reuter, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Of course, Larry. Thank you for having me.
Were you up for the game? You're drinking coffee, so...
Yeah, as we say on the other side of your border in Minnesota, you betcha. I was up. I think I got a cool 20 minutes between the end of my workday and then the restart of my workday, and then another 3 hours between the game and this show. So firing on all cylinders, to say the least. The iced coffee is pouring, and I couldn't be happier to be on here. I grew up on public radio in Minnesota, and it's just a thrill anytime to hop on a station like WPR. So thank you for having me.
Well, it's great, and but the team wasn't so great last night.
Far from it. Yeah.
You know, what the heck? Well, maybe just recap the game for those who didn't get a chance to watch.
Yeah, well, that's your recap. It was 0-0, and unfortunately, there wasn't much by way of being hard done. This was not a game that, for example, the Portugal goalkeeper, their opponent, had a fantastic game and stopped every shot, stopped a penalty. It wasn't a game where they had sent a lot of shots on target. They had a lot of promising play. Their defense looked stacked, and they just couldn't find a breakthrough, right? We've seen games like that, especially in a World Cup. It happens. You're playing against the other best teams in the world in a high-stakes game. You're bound to have fine margins decide it. Unfortunately, in this case, this was a game that, frankly, the United States deserved to lose, which means that the United States is very fortunate to still be playing in this World Cup based on their performances in the first three games. Portugal actually had probably the three or four best chances combined over the course of the game, including one 4 minutes from the end of the game that they set went past the goalkeeper, Alyssa Nair, and hit the post and went out. And if that had been 2 inches further to the left in its trajectory, the United States would be eliminated from the Women's World Cup. That's how fine the margins were, and that's how poor the performance was from the United States women's national team overnight, stateside, that we're to a point now where we're not talking about them as the front runner coming out of Group E, as the best team on their side of the bracket, as one of the four teams in the best form of the tournament. Instead, they are very lucky to be among the top 16 teams in this current World Cup.
I certainly would agree with that. You know, I did not watch last night's.
I don't blame you.
but I did watch the entire match with the U.S. and the Netherlands, and that was really, I'm telling you, so discouraging that first half. Mm. They just looked like they were so out of sorts and didn't know what they were doing. They looked a lot better when Rose LaValle came in the second half.
Absolutely.
It was like a two different teams. I was surprised. And Rose LaValle she's a UW.
Of course. Yeah.
former player. So we all watch her. But I was just amazed at how one person could make that big of a difference. Mm-hmm. Still, you know, didn't win, but...
Right, but saved a point, and ultimately, Rose LaValle coming off the bench against the Netherlands is the difference between us talking about the United States still being in this World Cup and them, as we know now, they would have missed if they didn't get that goal from the corner kick that Rose LaValle kicked. I think it's unfortunately something that was, we probably should have expected this, because throughout the last 3 years, head coach Vlatko Andonovski has continued to rotate his roster. The U.S. women's national team will play anywhere from 10 to 20 games per year. And usually what you want to see is they win the World Cup in 2019. We all want to see that. We all want to see them win the World Cup. So we're starting with a best case scenario already. 2020 is a lost year, not just for soccer, but for all of society. Okay. So 2021, you come in and you should be using that year to look at the young players and say, who is going to be someone I can build with? And then you look at your veterans and you say, who is someone who we need to thank for all of their service, but we need to bring in an alternative player who will be ready for 2023. Unfortunately, that work that should have just been focused in that 1 year so that the team could have had a full year of preparation going into this tournament, feeling confident that these are the starters or these are the 15, 16 players in contention to start. That work should have been done for a full year to get this team playing at its best in a World Cup. That's something Jill Ellis did in 2019. And instead, what we're seeing now is players who are still learning each other's habits, players like Savannah DeMello, who were called in having not played for the U.S. women's national team once before the World Cup. Players like Lynn Williams, who was left in and out of rosters despite her great form and hadn't played for the team since February, all trying to play at their highest level with great interconnectivity, which we've come to expect from the United States women's national team, which has historically been one of the most cohesive and deep programs in men's or women's soccer. And instead, they look like an absolute shell of their former selves.
Yeah, it was just amazing to me. In the Netherlands game, their passing was off. It just looked awful, and it must have been similar last night.
Yeah, it was arguably worse. I don't blame anyone who chose to sleep instead. if this wasn't my job, I maybe would have wished for that. But I think, unfortunately, it's players who are nervous, players playing with the expectation and the pressure of winning a third consecutive World Cup, something that has never happened on the women's side, never has happened on the men's side. And 14 of the players on the 23 women roster have never played in a World Cup before. So it's not like we're talking about the same team from 2019 or the same team from 2015 that won the final against Japan as well. This is a very different group of players. And for myself, after the last two performances in particular against the Netherlands and Portugal, I'm resetting my expectations. This is not the same U.S. women's national team. This is a team that can grow into being a very good team. They are also missing some very important players who are under the age of 25 who are injured for this tournament and will be part of the future. One who plays for the Chicago National Women's Soccer Team club, Mallory Swanson, who will be someone absolutely worth following in the next 4 years. But for the time being, we'll see how they fare. We'll see if they're able to get past the round of 16. We'll see if they can get into the quarterfinal. They'll be without Rose Lavelle for this next game due to a yellow card suspension.
Second one.
A very clumsy one, I might add. It looked like she just kind of fell and barrel rolled into a player's legs, which is a foul. You can't do that. You have to be in control of your body, but there was nothing about it that looked like a yellow card offense to me. You kind of have to put all of these on a spectrum, right? That's a foul. That's a yellow card. That's a red card. It didn't quite seem like it was in the middle of that. So it'll be hard. They've made it a lot harder for themselves than they ever should have made it with that group performance. And I guess we'll see what's next.
And now they're probably, instead of playing Italy, they're probably going to be playing Sweden, who's had a lot of success against them, and no Rose Lavelle.
Yeah, a few countries in the world have had more historical success against the United States than Sweden. They knocked them out of the last Olympics. You know, they were the program that forced them to compete for a bronze medal rather than a gold in 2021 in Tokyo. They're a team that has always played them close in Women's World Cups. You give them losses anytime they play. So they've made it very hard on themselves.
I don't know if you had a chance to read Meg Linden's article today, probably did. But she was talking in her article about some deeper problems. And actually, I have a niece who played on the under-17s and the under-20.
Wow.
A defender, but those teams had have had not good success in World Cup over the for their ages over the years. Mm-hmm. And everybody on the U.S. team, as I think Meg points out, all came up through the 17, under 17 and under 20.
Yeah. And that is an issue that's frankly pretty new on the women's side of the game. So the men's side has been, you know, playing at a higher level of investment from countries and infrastructures and FIFA and all of this for decades longer than the women, right? And so even if the U.S. women's national team wasn't playing well in these under 17, under 20 tournaments, they just had so many players and they had such a well-oiled machine of the NCAA college soccer system where they knew eventually the talent would rise, that regardless of how they were playing in these one-off tournaments, four games, five games in a row with a month of training beforehand, they'd be okay. They can't coast by on that sort of blind trust anymore because the rest of the world is catching up. And when we say catching up, I don't just mean they're magically developing better players than ever. That's kind of true, but they're actually just investing more. They're giving better platforms for young girls to play sooner than they would have been playing two decades ago. They're giving better training facilities. They're giving more opportune moments to develop. And as a result, once they get to the World Cup, the one that we're talking about now, not the U20 World Cup, they've seen it. They've done well before in a tournament like this. They've played against a handful of players that they're lining up against from other countries already. And they have the confidence and the chip on their shoulder that everyone wants to beat the United States women's national team these days.
Yeah, they don't. They're not afraid of the U.S. anymore, and just that factor in and of itself is worth a lot for for those teams.
It is.
So we've got the old. Who's the oldest player? Megan.
Megan Rapinoe. Yeah,
Rapinoe is the oldest at 38, and it's her last time around. She's retiring for sure. What do you think's her legacy as she leaves, you know, women's soccer?
Yeah, I think that she's one of the best players the United States has ever developed. But even more importantly, I think that she has helped the program, helped the concept of women's athletics. This goes beyond soccer. This goes beyond the women's national team. And make no mistake, she was at the forefront of equal pay for the women's national team compared to the men's national team. She was at the forefront of making sure that players were given equal treatment to the men's national team. And that will always be part of her legacy. Of course, that 2019 tournament where she won player of the tournament does pretty well to cement a legacy as well. But I think on the back of that, she hasn't just stopped with soccer. She's also helped with getting women into tennis, getting women into basketball, getting women into pro, just whatever programs they want, basically. And just saying, why are we putting these roadblocks in place of players, of children, of young adults who want to succeed, who want to flourish? And she's using her platform in such a holistic way that I think it's, even if she's a sub coming off the bench in this tournament for 30 minutes every other game, and even if she doesn't have the same impact, the United States won't have failed at this World Cup for any reason of Megan Rapinoe's doing. I think that her, it's very much on the starters, right? But I can see where she is a lightning rod, right? She is a person where if you respect the work she does off the field, if you like what she does on the field, and frankly, if you're if you are with the LGBTQI+ movement, she's untouchable. But if you, for whatever reason, if any of that rubs you the wrong way, she is going to be at the face of the why the United States failed at this World Cup content that we're going to be seeing coming from television networks, from media publications, you name it. So it is a tough life to be Megan Rapinoe. She is at the center of everything this program does, even when she's not on the field.
Just thinking back to 2019, her performance over her career has just been unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
Do you think Rose LaValle has any chance to take on? She's not quite the same personality, I don't think, as Megan.
Right, but I think what helps with Rose is that she's never forgotten why she does this. There was something that I stumbled upon when I was analyzing Rose LaValle's game after the Netherlands game, after that performance from the bench. And she had said something about how when she was a kid, she would ask her mom if she could, you know, look up on the internet, cool soccer tricks. That was always what she was searching. She was watching players doing cool things on the ball, and then she would run to the backyard in Cincinnati, Ohio, and she would try it, right? And then that's how she started. And she's never forgotten that at 9 years old, when she was writing in a journal, what do you want to be when you grew up? She said a member of the United States women's national team. When she would go for Halloween, she would dress up as Mia Hamm. Like, this is something that she has always wanted. And so I think when you have someone who is so intrinsically invested in what they're doing, they're not going to settle for being less than what they've aspired to be. And I think that Rose also brings that characteristic Midwestern humility, that sort of that calm, level-headed demeanor. The fact that at 24, she was the third best player at a World Cup. Is a remarkable achievement, frankly, in 2019 as well. I think that when you look at the United States heading into the 2027 World Cup, I think that she will be the heart and soul of this team. I think that arguably she already is one of the most important organs of this team, if not the heart. And I'm not going to force an analogy on that. But I think that she does have absolutely everything in front of her at this point. She's 28 years old, which means that she should have hopefully two more World Cups in her after this one. And I mean, hopefully the United States is able to get past Sweden or Italy or Argentina or whoever they face. That result will be figured out overnight for who they'll face in the next round. But hopefully they're able to get past them so we can see Rose Lavelle at least one more time at this World Cup, because she is also one of my favorite players to watch.
Yeah, she just had to be devastated.
Yeah, you could see it. I mean, the first word out of her mouth when she saw the card was no. And it wasn't like a no, like you're wrong. It was a no, like she knew if she got another yellow card in any circumstance, she would miss the next game. And you could really see it in the moment after the whistle. Kelly O'Hara, a veteran of the last two World Cup winning rosters, now kind of a backup fullback defender, rushed onto the field after the final whistle to wrap Rose Lavelle in a big hug and say, you did nothing wrong. Thank you. Your energy helped keep this team in this game and in this tournament. Don't beat yourself up over that foul.
Yeah. It's. Do you think there's any chance of them getting past even Sweden?
There's always a chance with the U.S. women's national team. This is the thing with this program, is unlike the men, you can never count them out because they have proven time and again, they've been up against it against Brazil in 2011. And Megan Rapinoe makes one beautiful cross from 45 yards out. And there's Abby Wambach out of nowhere with a diving header. These things just happen in a World Cup for the United States women's national team. And I think that's part of why the performance against Portugal was so frustrating. We know the talent of the players. We know the magic that they've conjured. Some of the players on this roster have pulled out of their bag of tricks throughout their careers. And it just hasn't come out for 270 minutes now. And we're waiting. We're anticipating it. And if they finally have it in them against Sweden, most likely, they can get past Sweden. If they don't, they won't. And I think it's really just as simple as that. They just need to be back on their A game.
On that note, I know you have to leave, Jeff. Thank you so much. Can we do this again sometime down the
Please.
Road?
Please do. Absolutely. I'm based out of Minnesota. We're in the same time zone anyway.
Jeff Reuter, a staff writer and who covers soccer for The Athletic. And it's a really good sports publication. I love reading The Athletic. So it was a treat for me to have Jeff with us as well today. We are going to turn our attention now to a little bit World Cup. I'm sure Janet McClain has some words about it and some thoughts about it, and maybe as it relates to her youth soccer coaching. Janet McClain, a 12U coach for the Region Soccer Club in Madison, will be our guest. Coming up next, I'm Larry Mealer. Well, it's Sports Tuesday on the show. Larry Mealer here, and we started by talking about World Cup soccer. We're going to continue maybe to talk a bit about World Cup soccer and to some extent how it might relate to youth soccer and girls soccer. And Janet McClain is joining us next. She's a 12. She is coaching 12-year-old kids for the Region Soccer Club out of Madison. And it's great to have her with us today to talk about youth soccer. And I hope you'll join in as we talk with her and join in with your own questions or comments. Do you have children who play in youth soccer. Did you play youth soccer? Love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jenna McLean, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
You know, I've spent untold hours watching my daughter play soccer. I think she started, she was really little. I mean, yeah, really little. And all through, and then playing on grade school teams, and then on to high school and played 4 years there. And now she's played in, at the college level a bit. So you can imagine the number of soccer games I've seen, but probably not nearly as many as you have.
No, probably not as many as I have. I actually have four kids, and they all played soccer.
Oh.
And then I went on to coach other kids as well. So, yeah, I've definitely been on that sideline a lot.
Well, yeah, you know, there's in some ways it could have been hockey, you know.
Oh, for sure. I probably would have been. I wouldn't have coached if it was hockey, just because I don't know the game as well. But I probably would have enjoyed it just as much.
Yeah. How did you happen to get into coaching?
Oh, man. So I played a lot of soccer over the years. You know, I started as a child, probably 6 or 7 years old, and played really all through adulthood as well. So I've probably played, 40, 50 years of soccer myself. So when my kids were little, they were on the sideline while mom was playing. And it was sort of a natural progression as they started playing. I just became more and more the coach rather than the player. So I coached them, you know, with club teams, just recreationally until they got to be about 10 years old. And then one by one, they would sort of step up and become more competitive.
So here we got the World Cup going on. How much attention do you pay to the World Cup, or just national and international soccer in general?
You know, I love watching soccer. So I wouldn't say I pay a lot of attention, but I definitely, you know, seek out opportunities to watch games. This World Cup's been difficult because of the time change.
Yeah.
You know, it just makes it a little bit more complicated. I was traveling over the last couple of weeks, and we were able to tune in to Fubo and watch it sort of on demand. So that was really nice because we were on vacation and just had no other obligations. So we could watch it at all hours, but we were rarely watching it live.
Well, I watched the Netherlands match with the U.S. live, and I just talked about that a little earlier with Jeff Reuter, but it wasn't as much fun to watch that match as it was some of the matches from years past.
Yeah, that's for sure. It's been a fairly sedate set of games so far.
Yeah, it sure has. Do the kids that you're coaching, are they paying attention to this as well?
You know, so we're in between seasons. We form the teams in June, and then we'll start playing in August. So I actually was hoping to try to get my team together to watch a game, and the time change obviously messes that up a little. I'm still sort of hoping that we can tape one and then watch it sort of in an off time, or just watch a different country if we can find, like, even if it's at, like, 9 in the morning, maybe try to get them all together. But I've also got my eye on UW games set up. Coming Friday, that would be a fun team outing and get them watching, you know, women playing soccer to sort of see the bigger field.
Yeah, I think just watching other older women or young women playing has to have a positive impact on your own team.
Oh, for sure, especially when we do teams here in Madison. And you can really sort of get down close, and you can hear them yelling, and you can hear the things that they say, and it definitely makes an impression. These 11, 12-year-old girls are like, wow, like they are really intense. And, you know, it's good for them to see that's sort of where the game goes. Get over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, these by any chance, I'm just trying to think of how to put this, these big televised sporting events like World Cup, do they they have to help shape, in some ways, youth sports and soccer?
Yeah, I agree. I was thinking about that, too. I think back to, the 80s with the gymnastics. Remember how the gymnasts did so well in the Olympics, and all of a sudden every little girl in America wanted to be, the next big gymnast. I think soccer is sort of going through that now in the last 20 years or so, where there's a national and an international stage and famous sort of stars that are really good at soccer. And so now there's all these, younger kids that are also playing that actually see women professional athletes playing the game that they're enjoying on their school field.
Yeah, I've got, as I told Jeff earlier, I've got two nieces who are both at that level playing in the world under 20 and under 17 World Cups, and they're a lot of fun to watch. How do you approach coaching with 12-year-olds?
Oh man, big question. So I have two different, maybe even three different things that I would sort of emphasize, and one is just the straight out exercise sort of social aspect of it. To get them out there and sort of positively looking at their activity and enjoying playing the game, not being like embarrassed by being sweaty or embarrassed to tell a player what to do. So just that confidence that sort of comes with, I am me and I can do what I want. And then there's the second piece, which is understanding the interplay of the team, right? So yes, you are you and you can do whatever you want, but you're now part of a group, bigger group, and you're trying to accomplish something. So trying to figure out how to balance that individual and team, I think, is really important. And then at this age, at the age I have, just physical skill, just the ability to manipulate a ball with your foot, that's just huge. And they have to learn how to do that. And if they haven't learned how to do that by the time they're 16, 17, 18, their days are limited. It's hard to play soccer if you can't control the ball. And as you get older, there's more and more people that can control the ball. So it just gets harder and harder.
Yeah, it does indeed. I'm always surprised at how my daughter is pretty good at controlling the ball,
right?
But she's had a lot of time to learn. I can remember back to when she's like seven or so, or six, and kind of watching those quote games.
yeah, and it's parents always joke around about swarm ball, right? But it's got to start somewhere, right? You got to start somewhere, and trying to get them to figure out how to go from just chasing the ball to actually doing something with the ball. That's a big piece of it.
What's the most satisfying thing that you get out of coaching?
Ooh, most satisfying. I think just the joy of playing, getting people to see that it's an activity they can do. I played 20 years past college, and getting them to see that it's a way to get out there and exercise and see your friends and enjoy yourself, but also to compete. So it's kind of just nice to see that light bulb go on and have kids see that bigger picture.
It's fun too. I observed with my own daughter, the camaraderie that develops and the friendships that develops in a team like that.
Yeah. Yeah, feeling like you belong.
And it's a different kind of sport from, the other football. To me, it seems like, anyway, because as the kids get more sophisticated and the play, there's a kind of a free flow that goes on that sometimes it's hard for, I think, somebody just watching to understand. Talk about that a little bit.
One of the things you learn when you're coaching is how little the coach actually impacts the game during the game. right? So we do a lot of teaching about what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it and how to manage the ball. But once that whistle blows, you know, you're on the sideline and all you can do is sort of try to yell in there. You can change what positions people play or what tactics the team is using overall. But the decision-making the kids do on the ball is sort of in their hands. So it is sort of empowering to the kids, right, that it's their game and they need to play it through. I think that's kind of the most important thing about soccer, to sort of see that piece of it. It's not like, I think, baseball and football where the coach is still calling most of the shots.
Yeah, and something I had to learn, it wasn't that hard to learn, I guess, because, you know, you're always watching your own kid when you're a parent.
Right.
But I've someone else has talked about this as well, but somebody once told me early on, when things were getting a little more sophisticated for Emily, was don't pay attention to the ball so much. Look at how the other players are, what they're doing.
Right.
And of course most people want to do is they want to watch the ball, but
sure.
I think you get more enjoyment out of it if you don't look at the ball all the time and spend more time looking at how the other players are responding
to
the person with the ball.
I think as adults we see that really clearly, right? You'll hear a lot of parents talking about anticipate what's going to happen, start to move toward the middle when you see your teammate go wide. But at the 11 or 12-year-old level, that's not always as obvious. So that's a big piece of the coaching, is to try to teach them how to anticipate the play or how to figure out what's going on so they move to put themselves in a better position.
Yeah. As you think about it, now you've been doing this a long time, and you played, and now you're a coach. You've been a coach a while now, too. How's the game or the approach to the game changed? Has it changed very much over the years?
So, yeah, I think it's changed a ton. It's still basically the same game, but I do think when I played, there was a lot more movement. We relied on the ball movement between players in order to break down the defense, where now I think players are a lot more capable of taking people on one by one. So they still move the ball, like across the field, to try to figure out ways to get through the defense. But when they see that opportunity to take somebody on, they don't hesitate. They just do it. Where when I played, I would say that was few and far between. We very rarely tried to break through the defense by one-on-one. We always did it through ball movement, putting the ball through the defense. So I think that's a huge difference, and that change probably started 20, 25 years ago. But you really can see it, and you can see just the skills of the players changing, and as they get better and better, they just are more and more capable. The second thing that I think has changed is that there are a lot more girls teams. So when I played, there were no girls teams. I think when I was a freshman in high school, I was playing on a women's team because that was the only opportunity to play with women. There were only, you know, I think there were five or six of us that were under 18 that played on this women's team. And there were no other girls that I know of playing on a competitive soccer team in Madison.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, and that, now you compare that to now, there's so many.
The growth in it. And I think the what always surprised me for so many years, it just exploded. It seemed to explode, the amount of youth soccer. But then it didn't transfer right away, at least here in the U.S., to, you know, the professional level or watching people, paying attention. You see that, or you probably saw that as well.
Well, I think it depended who was looking. I mean, when I was 18, I could still find games on TV to watch, but they were games out of Europe. But I do remember that. I remember getting up early and watching games from the World Cup that was happening in Europe. And you could see them. There weren't a lot that were televised, but you could find them. And there probably just wasn't that many people looking, so they didn't publish that many. When I played, there was a professional team in Chicago, the Chicago Fire,
mm-hmm.
and they came to Madison and played the UW men's team. So I remember going to play the UW men's team, which was pretty cool at the time. But, you know, not everybody would even have been aware of that. I was in the soccer community, so that's how I knew about it.
So you're here we are. We're kind of winding up here a little bit, but you're seasonal. So you're kind of in a between seasons a little bit now.
Yeah, we'll start up. You know, right now everybody's immersed in activities. They're just finishing up. So usually we start like 2 or 3 weeks into August, and then our first games will be the first weekend of September.
And how many kids do you work with?
I have 16 on my team. We play 99, so we're not quite playing a full field yet. But next year they'll move to the full field, which is 11v11.
Are you looking forward to that?
The bigger field?
Yeah.
You know, kind of. I mean, I'll probably stay with the younger group, and my group will move to a different coach and a different field. I don't think that I have a very loud voice, and so I kind of like to stay on the smaller fields. I focus a little bit more on the individual tactics and less on the team.
And it doesn't hurt for players to have a different coach, you know. Change is good that way. There's probably going to be some changes coming up on the U.S. women's team, depending on how things roll on Sunday when we probably play Sweden. Sweden. But, Janet, first, I want to thank you so much for being a coach.
Oh,
I have always respected the coaches that my daughter had, and really was happy because I wouldn't have been a good coach. So I was really happy that we had people like you who were willing to take the time and the energy to help the kids. So thank you so much, Janet. I hope we have a chance to talk again. It was fun talking with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Janet McLean. She is a 12 and under coach for the region. Well, actually, a 12 under coach for the region soccer club in Madison. And it was fun talking with her about girls and youth soccer. She knows a lot about it. Well, we're going to do a little history for you coming up next. The history of Midwestern women in baseball. There's lots of stories about that, and there's a great article I had a chance to read the other day about it. And we'll have two guests to talk with you about women in baseball. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.